It is April 2nd, 2007. Welcome, everyone. We have a full agenda, and I apologize. Senator Courtney and Senator Cruz are not going to be here today, and we're trying to find Senator Carter at this point in time. But I would like to open a public hearing in SJR 24. And we will be doing SB 135 as soon as we have a quorum, because we can't vote without at least over half of us here. David Goldberg.
For the record, I'm David Goldberg, the Executive Director of the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute. Good morning, and thank you, Chair Monis Anderson and Senator Gordley and Bacon Committee members. I want to speak very briefly in support of this, I think, important Senate joint resolution. I think the resolution, frankly, says it all in its wording. I mean, it recognizes the facts of the matter that we're in, as I've been speaking to, a perfect storm of an aging population, a growing population in Oregon, and a growing aging of the workforce population. And so as healthcare demand is increasing into our future, and we've got an aging workforce that will be retiring as the baby boomer generation retires, there's a growing gap between the demands of healthcare needs in the state and the ability of a qualified professional workforce to take care of those needs. And so this recognizes that dilemma and supports in essence a number of statewide initiatives, not the least of which is my organization, the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute, which is a public-private partnership really looking at addressing the needs, and the Oregon Center for Nursing, and you'll hear much more from the Oregon Center shortly on Senate Bill 04 that you'll be hearing today as well, as the lead organization addressing the nursing shortage issues in the state. The only thing that I think is controversial here and that I think is important to state in this setting, good morning, Senator Carter, is that the governor's proposed budget really was a first step in addressing at the community college, at the OUS, and at the OHSU level, restoring funding that really disappeared over the 6 years preceding during our terrible recession. And when you look at the sum total of Governor Kulongoski's proposed budget, it was bold, it was forthright, it was restoring initiatives that really would get us back on the road of restoring some of those classes and faculty and the capacity to address some of these needs that we've spoken to before. But it was only a beginning. It really got us back to 2000, if you look at the actual funding. And now when we see the chair's budget, it gets very scary because, frankly, the largest negative input impact of the chair's budget is on healthcare workforce development. And it really took money to a very good cause, K-12. I mean, one can't argue with the needs of K-12, but taking money away from the community college and away from OIT and away from OHSU, focused monies that were really dedicated to workforce development in healthcare, that the focus seems dramatic to me. And so we really are supporting restoring the governor's proposed budget in these areas. And there's some incredible small initiatives, seemingly small in the context of a state budget, but that would have dramatic impact. I mean, OIT, for the first time in its history, has raised over $20 million of local monies in order to build a facility that they have money to operate, but $9 million that was in the governor's proposed budget is vacant in the chair's budget. And it was that $9 million, which is 25% of the cost of that facility, makes it impossible to build. And so it's those kinds of things that I hope you can look at and take positions about and restore some of the funding back to the governor's proposed budget, really as a beginning. And I think that's all we can ask for in this session. With that, I'll close testimony. Be happy to answer questions.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for your passionate comments. I want you to know that I certainly share your concern. We do need to restore to the level of the governor's budget, but I would also suggest to us that we need to go beyond that and look at how we can enhance the budgets for community colleges and higher ed. And the opportunity to do that can only come through revenue reform. There is a conversation about revenue reform taking place in this building. It's my hope that we'll be able to turn up the volume on that revenue reform conversation, because the reality is that the our current revenue gathering system, as you know, is inadequate to meet the needs of 21st century Oregon. The revenue gathering system that we have was framed in the 20th century for 20th century needs. And until and unless we grapple with that fact, and again, we have the opportunity to do that in this session. We have 3 months remaining. We are going to be in a hard place, but we don't have to be. That's a choice. It isn't a choice that I want to make, and I don't think it's a choice that we need to make. And I think that there are people, and I see one of my colleagues sitting in the back of the room. I'm going to call his name, Senator Westland, and some of my other colleagues, Schrader, Deckard, are focused on revenue reform. At the end of the day, all of the budgets that we craft during this session, all of the budgets will be unsustainable. We must deal with revenue reform. Mm-hmm. So I would ask you to please insert that as a part of your message, and I ask all of our partners out there who are concerned about where we are with higher ed funding and community colleges funding to get on board the revenue reform train. That has to happen. Thank you.
I'm very supportive of Senate Joint Resolution 24, and you'll notice I'm a chief sponsor on it too. So I hear what you say. I do want to bring up one other group of nurses that we haven't really focused on. I forget. I think they say 3 out of 5 nurses are not working in the workforce. They're trained as nurses, but they're not working. And I believe that we need to start looking at those nurses, especially those who are volunteering, and making it known to those nurses, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands of nurses, how we can attract them back into the field, particularly at the volunteer level. Mm-hmm. I know parish nurses and Red Cross nurses have come to talk to me saying there is such a need on recruiting volunteer nurses also in those organizations. So I want... when we're starting to think about healthcare workforce, let's also think about the pool that we already have and not necessarily always about the pool, which we have to focus on, the pool that we need to train yet, because we definitely need those in the hospital setting. But we have many, I think, places where volunteer nurses also can work, whether it is in the nursing homes, Red Cross, parish nurses, maybe even schools. Put that in the back of your mind. And any other discussion, and anyone else on SJR 24? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to close the public hearing on SJR 24, and I'd like to open a work session on SJR 24.
Madam Chair, I move SJR 24 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Gourley moves Senate Joint Resolution 24 to the floor. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered, and mark Senator Cruz and Senator Courtney as excused. And
yes.
And I'll carry the bill.
Just some comments before you get started. I voted yes on this initiative, but I tell you what. I'm where Senator Gourley is, and I'm sure that many of you have heard this before. And this message is to the people of Oregon. Senator Gourley is exactly right. Our revenue is woefully inadequate to take care of infrastructural needs. I'm not talking about things that voters usually say are fluff. You look at the judiciary unit of our government. They're woefully underfunded. We are 50th in the nation of paying our judiciary. When we look at workforce issues, I mean simple access, entry-level workforce. Those of us that are up and around today are going to need nurses, but we're going to need ancillary support people in place as well. We can't do the training. These guys, I mean, Dr. Goldberg can just sit up here and fuss at the legislature, but ladies and gentlemen, the money is just not in the system. And we've used every one-time source of money we have in the state, every pot of it. Our bonding authority is almost at the point of needing to be capped. We have to go to the people for you to be prepared to pay for the kind of Oregon that you want to live in and you've come to enjoy. I just don't know how we're going to do it indifferently. If I could wave my magic wand, we would have enough nurses in the system starting at about eighth grade, getting enough of the math they need, being exposed to the kind of science classes they need, having energetic teachers that love teaching science and love to inspire kids to do it, having enough nurses that are well paid, because the one thing that we forget, a lot of them leave because they're not making money and giving their lives up for it. So somewhere along the line, and I know in a way I'm probably talking to the choir, but I think if we have to be able to have groups in our homes to talk about the infrastructural needs of Oregon and how we're going to lose too many of our young people that are graduating from college and stuff here because they're not going to stay in a state whose system is so woefully underfunded that they can live in the southern region and in the east without having to compromise their lifestyles, because that's what we're doing here. So I'm hoping that our message in terms of revenue-raising issues is getting to all of you, at least start talking about it so we can pay for the things that we care about. Madam Chair, thank you for your indulgence, because I know this is not a revenue committee, nor is it a Ways and Means committee.
But it's critical, because we can't have policy without revenue. Right. Thank you, Senator Carter. With that, I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 948. Oh, wait, let's do, I'm sorry, I'll close that right now, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 135. And Felicia Holgate and John McCauley, if you want to come up. Committee, remember, we did this a while back. We said parties get together and solve the problem, and it looks like they did.
Oh, great.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Felicia Holgate, I'm director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. Basically, what happened after the public hearing is, excuse me, the board was concerned about the very short definition that we got from Legislative Council, and we all agreed we'd like to have the Model American OT Association definition, which was very long. And we looked at that model definition, and with John McCauley for speech and Tracy Rutten for physical therapy, we came up with some amendments we all agreed to. However, when it went back to Legislative Council, they still said it was too broad a definition, it was too long. And so we chose, the board thought it would be better just to keep the definition as we have, and we plan to adopt the model definition as a rule, which is what is allowed in the last section that says that we can adopt some of the scope of practice by rule. That's in the very last page, to adopt rules that define the scope of practice of occupational therapy and reflect national standards for the practice of occupational therapy. We plan to adopt those rules with the amendments that we've already agreed to, but we'll have to go through the administrative process for that. So these amendments that I think you have before you today are fine with the board, and we would appreciate you passing the bill with those amendments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association. Ms. Trader outlined the process that was followed after the hearing, and we're here just to say that we are no longer opposed to the bill based on the commitments that have been made to adopt the language that we've agreed to. And we appreciate the work of Ms. Trader and others involved with the bill to make this happen.
Holgate. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ms. Holgate.
All right, any further discussion? All right, we have an amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 135.
Senator Gordley moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 135. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 135 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 135 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Gordley, would you mind carrying this?
Certainly.
Okay. Now I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 948, and I see that Senator Westland is here. And do you want to start us all off, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. For the record, I am Senator Ben Westland, District 27, and I am here this morning to testify in favor of Senate Bill 948. And while I do have concerns that 948 is just a little too narrow at this juncture in its scope and doesn't address some of the other medical facilities, imaging facilities, surgery centers, to name just a few, it is an excellent bill and an excellent first step, and one to which I give my wholehearted support. A short history of Certificate of Need, or CN as it's called in Oregon. Initially, our CN was crafted to apply to an extensive variety of healthcare facilities and services. But since its inception over 36 years ago, our CN has continued to be diluted to reflect only a mere shadow of its former self. Today, the Department of Human Services spends an incredible $148,000, that includes 0.75 FTE, to locate, as they have in this last biennium, nearly $1 billion worth of hospital facilities. This contrasted with that ever so vital, and I don't mean to be pejorative here, but this contrasted with that ever so vital program, medical marijuana, where we spent a paltry $1.7 million and invested in 9 FTE. Something is desperately wrong when we spend $150,000 in CN to locate medical facilities and nearly $1.7 million to administer a medical marijuana program. This cannot continue in Oregon. And I don't want anyone to construe these remarks as me being opposed to having every available life-giving facility and technology available to Oregon citizens. Redundancy has value. I can tell you from my own personal experience that in the 03 session, it was of great value to me, and some would question, although I like to think it was of great value to this institution, that I was able to walk across the street and receive my life-giving medical chemotherapy and radiation, and not have to go you know, get in a car, drive up to OHSU, receive the same treatment, come back, you know, ever more tired just from the drive and the hassle of checking in. Redundancy is a good thing. We need hospitals. We need surgery centers. And we need imaging facilities to be available and conveniently available. But in a system that rewards the proliferation of unnecessary facilities, and I cite my own community, Bend, Oregon, where we have 7 MRI machines.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm just so desperately, I'm so medically fragile that, you know, I'm just sit, you know, in a complete state of nerves that, you know, waiting for that 8th MRI machine in Bend. We have 7 MRI machines in Bend.
Serving a population, I'm sorry.
6 in Southern Oregon.
Yeah. Senator?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
What is the population of Bend?
Population of Bend is right. Let me just give you Deschutes County. It's about 170,000 people.
With 7 MRI?
7. I can spell that for you. S-E-V-E-N. The other interpretation is too many.
Yes.
And we are all paying for that.
Absolutely.
I did a town hall recently, very similar to the one that Lori, Senator Mona Sanderson, so graciously hosted in her district. And the physician that just installed the 7th MRI showed up and was so proud of the fact that he did not encumber, did not spend one dime of public money in the purchase of his MRI machine. And I pointed out to him, I said, yes, but your financial projections anticipate using a great deal of public money to finance and pay for your machine. And he acknowledge that, yes, that was true.
It's true.
So, like I say, there is a balance here that this state must achieve. As I've indicated so many times in the last couple of weeks, the healthcare costs in Oregon are up 73% since 2000 with no end in sight. Certainly not all of that is driven by bricks and sticks and medical technology, but a large portion of it is. Certificate of need is one way that the state has to allow for the rational construction, proliferation of new facilities, which we need, without breaking the bank and overspending our limited public budgets. I do appreciate the conversation, the comment from Senator Gordley and certainly Senator Carter early. This is not an endless money pit. And for us to be able to provide as much medical care to as many people as we possibly can, a well-crafted, you know, thoughtfully written certificate of need is one necessary step in the process. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Westland. And then since we, I want Lynn Marie, who is a pro, and Carolyn Matthews to come up also.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Senator Westland.
Good morning.
Could you comment, please, on if there's opposition, your understanding of the opposition to this particular bill, this particular approach?
I think my understanding of the opposition is that I think, like all entities or businesses or even human beings, that change creates anxiety. And I think that the opposition, you know, is more concerned about not what we do, but how we do it.
Thank you, Senator Westland.
Thank you.
And from here on out, I want the proponents to spend about 10 or 15 minutes, and then the opposition 10 to 15 minutes, and we need to move on then to the next bill. Thank
Would
you.
Would you like me to stay, or do you
You can stay, or you can leave. But
I'll stay.
At this point. Okay.
Chair Monis-Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Marie Kreider, and I'm here to testify on behalf of SEIU today. I've given you a lot of material, and I know you haven't a lot of time, so I want to kind of orient you to what I've provided to you. In my written testimony, I include 8 points which describe the major changes made in the bill and refer you to the piece of the bill that does that. So if we don't have time to go through all of that, it's there in your materials. I've also handed you a set of materials that is a print out of a PowerPoint presentation, which gives you some background material that I'd like to flip through real quickly because it kind of gives you some of the context, like the seven MRIs in Bend that we're operating under. The first slide on page 2 gives you the annual growth in per capita spending in Oregon on health on hospital care as compared to the national average, and what it shows is that our spending on hospital care in this state is going up much more rapidly than it is in the rest of the country, and I think a piece of that is overinvestment in capital construction. The third slide describes hospital occupancy rates in Oregon. The fourth, the upward trend in what we're spending on construction of healthcare facilities nationally. Comparable data really isn't available in Oregon, so I use the national. The fifth slide just gives you a sense of what it costs to build hospitals. The sixth slide indicates that the average inpatient hospital discharge in Oregon costs about $6,700, and 15% of that, or almost $500, is spending on capital construction, not the nurses, not the physicians, but just the facilities. So it's a big chunk of money that we're saying in this bill ought to be spent thoughtfully for the right things and not the wrong things. The seventh slide is an excerpt from a piece done by the Dartmouth Atlas Project. It describes this in rigorous terms, the kind of if you build it, they will come phenomenon, that is that when we overbuild an infrastructure in healthcare, we tend to then use it more. So that there are two pieces of what we're trying to deal with in this bill. One is simply the actual dollars that are spent on capital construction is something we have to pay for as users of healthcare. And secondly, that when we build too much, we tend to use more. And that also drives up the cost of health care in our state. And the final slide compares Oregon's health certificate of need law to that around the rest of the country and demonstrates that we have a very weak one. Madam Chair, would you like me to go through quickly the changes that the bill makes, or would that be helpful?
Yes, that would
okay.
be helpful.
So the first, we like to see this as a bill that gives the community a voice in the certificate of need process in a new way, and then expands the certificate of need program. So the piece that the voice piece, in effect, is that right now, we do the Certificate of Need program as sort of abstracted from any kind of healthcare planning. And what we really need, and what we had at the beginning of this program that Senator Westland described, was a regional planning process as well. What this does is say, let's have the Department of Human Services divide the state into planning areas. and invite then the localities to engage in a regional planning process that says this is what we need in our communities in terms of additional facilities and services, and that then becomes a backdrop for the Certificate of Need program. Now, the way the bill is drafted, it actually requires DHS to set up those planning areas, to do healthcare needs assessments for each of those planning areas, and then it requires the localities to appoint planning commissions. That was not actually what we had in mind, so we're recommending that that piece be amended to leave it to the localities to do the needs assessment and the planning. Leave it to the communities to do those pieces together, but make it voluntary so that we're not requiring that this be done, but we're inviting it to be done, and we're saying to communities, if you do this, we will take that into account in our Certificate of Need program. The bill expands the scope of Certificate of Need beyond covering simply new hospitals, this is point two on page three of my testimony, to also cover relocations, expansions of bed capacity, reductions of bed capacity, offering of new services, and under certain circumstances, the building of new medical office buildings. Some people ask us if we would support a broader Certificate of Need bill that would cover freestanding facilities, ambulatory surgery centers, imaging centers, and so forth. And what I would say to you about that is our view is that if there's a broad consensus among, including a consensus of the providers that would be covered, that yes, it makes sense to go that far. But if there is not a consensus among providers that they support this bill, then we think the bill as written is a modest step in the right direction to begin taking on the piece of the healthcare industry that spends the most money and where we spend the most of our public and private healthcare dollars. The bill also, I'm now on the fourth point at the top of page four, the bill places the criteria for review of Certificate of Need applications in statute for the first time. Right now they're an administrative rule. The criteria are primarily the same as in the administrative rule, essentially, but they do add quality for the first time. Which we think is very important because we think the research clearly demonstrates that Certificate of Need programs improve quality of services. Fifth, the bill specifies who's entitled to request a hearing on an application for a Certificate of Need, whereas the law now lets the agency decide who is in an interested party, so this makes that clearer. Sixth, it empowers DHS to take legal action to enforce compliance with its order, but also with promises made by applicants in the Certificate of Need process and with conditions imposed by the agency in connection with grant of a Certificate of Need. The bill is intended to leave the law as it is with respect to long-term care facilities. It's my understanding that we may need to do a little tweaking to make sure that that's the case. And eight, the bill recognizes that the problem of overinvestment in healthcare facilities is primarily an urban one rather than a rural one, and therefore includes an exemption for rural hospitals. I would call to your attention that the existing law exempts both type A and B hospitals, and as the bill actually only exempts type A's, which are the more remote hospitals. And that's something that you should look at and say, is that the right choice or not? With that, has the committee any questions?
I remember we worked very hard on this last session, so a lot of this is very familiar information. And I applaud you for coming back and presenting this to us. Stay put, and let's have Ms. Matthews speak. And
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Matthews. I'm a unit secretary at the Providence Health Systems in the Adult Inpatient Psychiatric Unit at Providence, Portland. My coworkers and I are organizing a union with SEIU 49 for a voice on the job and more input into the type of care we provide. It's that desire for a voice in patient care that brings me here today to testify in support of SB 948. This bill is important because a hospital should be accountable to the community it serves. We are already doing that in many ways. At our own hospital, there is access to quality inpatient psychiatric care and an emergency room, and we don't discharge patients unless they have a satisfactory place to go. However, that's not enough, and patients often have to wait several days in the ER until a psychiatric bed becomes available. This is about setting priorities for services. Often those services are tied to how much revenue it generates for the hospital. Inpatient psychiatric services are critical, but are not lucrative to the hospital. But without the care that these patients receive in our unit, I don't know what would happen to them. This mix-up of priorities is why my coworkers and I are forming a union and why SB 948 is important. The community should have a say in what its priorities are and where their health care dollars should be spent. Quite a few patients are on our unit for weeks or months, restricted entirely to the unit itself. They often ask for some fresh air and exercise, but all we can offer them is pacing the hallways and a single exercise bike that must be monitored by staff. Many patients put on extra weight, up to 20 or 30 pounds, jeopardizing their physical as well as their mental health. For many months, the staff and the patients in our unit have looked out our windows to see the hospital constructing a tower so huge it dwarfs the rest of the hospital. But we have no secure outdoor exercise courtyard for the mental health patients. The line staff have repeatedly brought this to the attention of our supervisors and hospital administration and have received no response. Apparently, it isn't a priority of the hospital to provide a secured outdoor exercise area for mental health. SB 948 will encourage hospitals to have more accountability to what people need and will help set priorities. I believe psychiatric patients should be a higher priority. I want a voice in the priorities of my own hospital, and the community deserves a voice in the priorities of their hospitals. Be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. I have a question for Lynn Marie Kreider, first of all. If we were to pass Senate Bill 948, where would we land on the matrix, the con matrix? Considering what you said in your testimony that our current process is weak, and I would say pitifully weak, where would we wind up on this matrix?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gordley, that's a good question, and I don't know the answer to it. I'd be happy to look at it, but I haven't made a real in-depth study of the other laws. I know, for example, that Washington State has a much more broadly focused program than we do.
It would be very helpful to know how far up the grid or the matrix we would move if we adopted the language as it's proposed. And then a question for Ms. Matthews, who's also one of my constituents, and thank you for your testimony this morning. The Providence facility that you're speaking of, is that 47th and Gleason?
Yes, Providence Portland Medical Center.
Okay.
Yes.
Disappointed to hear about the lack of outdoor facilities, access to fresh air. I'm hearing you correctly,
yes,
for adult psychiatric patients?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. I would like to visit with you and others about that later. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Yes, Senator Carter.
Senator Gordon, I'd like to be a part of that as well.
Thank you.
We did pass a bill, thanks to Senator Monis Anderson in here. Well, it would be against the law to do that, but I want to go to Senator Westland. those of us in the legislature in the 80s sweat blood and tears trying to work on the certificate of need.
Mm-hmm.
And here you're telling me that we don't have enough money even for DHS to make its rounds to talk with the different interest groups regarding the building of new facilities or either to monitor before it becomes a reality in the state.
I think the appropriation, and I'm glad you picked up on that dichotomy, if you will, I think the appropriation reflects the priorities of the legislature, and over, you know, since the inception of Oregon's original CN, which was, you know, a very broad, very comprehensive, very robust certificate of need, that original concept has been watered down, diluted to the point by our choices. To where it reflects $150,000, 0.75 FTE in this last budgetary cycle. So I think this is one of those situations where, you know, we as an institution have to revisit, you know, certificate of need and what it implies. I mean, the rationale behind the watering down was let markets just determine what's, you know, best for the community. And at some level, you know, I mean, there's some wisdom in that. Mm-hmm. Until those markets start to act irrationally, i.e. 7 MRIs in Bend, hospitals moving across the freeway in mm-hmm. Eugene, it's something that's long overdue and something that I think is, you know, one of the most fundamental responsibilities of this legislature.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Just to add to your numbers, even hospitals that are leaving their core base to go in outer areas as well, which is, does not seem to make any sense to me at all. And I think in terms of Kaiser Hospital leaving a mass of people and to go to a more popularized area in anyway, that's a political issue that I still have problems with, causes me pain, but it's something, if we had the money for DHS to be on top of it, we would have a much more systematized way of bringing hospitals on, bringing surgical centers on, and it would be much more managed, because as I look at Ms. Kreider's comments, that today current law clearly authorizes legal action to enforce an order, but it's less certain that it allows the department to require hospitals to do what it says will do to serve the community. That's exact, and I'm quoting from your pages, so I'm not outside of anything you said. And that goes back to what Ms. Matthews is saying. We have three people before us right now that are saying that there's something that is critically wrong when the people don't have a voice in what happens in health care, yet the people are expected to pay the cost for health care. And somewhere, and I'm definitely a supporter of this bill. There's no doubt about it. Even though it does remind me of my 83 and 84 years in the legislature and how painful that was, but I guess I'm just back on the line again, because I think it makes sense, and I believe in the free market system as well. I should say that to you. But sometimes it does go awry of itself, because we always have creative geniuses who believe that they know best than the other genius before them.
All right, we need to move on. I'm sorry, but thank you, panel. And just in case you're leaving, it's extremely important for me that this certificate of need dovetails with the health care reform package, Senate Bill 329, which has certificate of need in it also. So we will be having a work group. I would like to get from you and Senator Bates who you would like to have represent your offices in that piece. Okay.
We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, and I'd like to call up Jane Ellen Wydance, Mary Gear from DHS, and Kevin Earls. And that will conclude this, and we need to move on at 9:30 to the next bill. And okay. Oh, and Grant Higginson, I guess, was a part of that group, too. Why don't we have Kevin and Mary Jane, Jane Ellen go first, and then DHS. Thank you.
Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee, my name is Jane Ellen Wydance, and I represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. We represent all 57 hospitals in Oregon and all of the communities and patients that we serve. I thank you for allowing me to testify today on this bill, and I would like to put it on the record that we are in opposition to this bill. And it's not because Oregon's hospitals are against planning. We are committed to quality, safety, and planning and controlling costs. We just don't think Senate Bill 948 gets us there. The bill only focuses on hospitals and nursing facilities, and it doesn't look at the entire healthcare system. It further fragments our healthcare delivery system by focusing on only one component of the system, or two components of the system, versus looking at all of the drivers in the healthcare system, and especially those that are continuing to build new facilities with no oversight by the Department of Human Services. Senator Westland's point on imaging centers and different imaging facilities and machines is an important one to note. They wouldn't even be covered under this bill. Additionally, Senator Westland and Senator Bates talk about what we pay for is what we get, and it's why we're seeing constant growth in ambulatory surgical centers and other freestanding, standalone facilities, because, again, they are not required to go under any type of certificate of need process, so that anybody can open up one of these facilities at very little regulation and oversight. Additionally, the bill will not address the issues raised by Ms. Matthews. As many of you know, I'm working extensively with the Community Mental Health Coalition, and to solve the problems of Oregon's inpatient psychiatric hospital beds, we need a comprehensive system that focuses both on the front-end delivery system and prevention, and also getting people to the appropriate care facilities as they come out. Senator Gordley, you had asked, would it get us up this grid? And I gave you the 2007 grid, and we hand-marked it since it was so light you couldn't see it. This bill would not take us up that grid because, again, it's still only focusing on hospitals and nursing facilities. Oregon rolled back its CON, and we continue to face those choices that we made in Oregon by having a system that only focuses on hospitals. And we, again, are very much supportive of planning. We support local planning and community involvement. We want to be at the table in helping deliver quality health care. We want to be involved in larger health care reform. We believe certificate of need or regional planning needs to be a part of that. We don't think it can be a standalone process at this point if we are going to move larger health care reform this session. And we hope we can be at the table to help you dissolve or design a system, not dissolve. Design a system.
Freudian slip.
We want to design a system that will really make sense in Oregon, in the healthcare delivery system that we have today, not what we had in the 1970s. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kevin Earls with the Oregon Association of Hospitals as well. And I think I'd like to just add a couple of thoughts to Jane Ellen's testimony. First of all, I don't want the takeaway message from our presence here today to be an opposition to a comprehensive planning process. Nor do I want it to be that we are opposed to this bill in the context of what it can become. We're opposed to it in its very narrowly focused iteration that we have before us today. And I think the comments that I'd make are really about recreating the mistakes of the past within a certificate of need process. Jane Ellen has mentioned, and you've seen this chart that shows Oregon woefully out of balance with other states that have a comprehensive planning approach. And yet, this bill, as it's currently constructed, would simply amplify those inadequacies. And we're still focusing really just on nursing homes and hospitals. And what we're seeing in communities and in healthcare delivery is really a transformation from services being provided pretty much exclusively in an inpatient setting to a huge majority of services now being provided in an outpatient setting. This has created kind of a conflict and an opportunity. The conflict is that as services are provided in an outpatient setting, it has induced or encouraged for-profit private investors to enter into a market and open up facilities to pull those services out of the local hospital. And
i.e. the surgery centers. I'm so sorry, Madam Chair.
It's just Senator Carter. Yes.
I apologize.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, that's correct. And it's not just surgery centers. It's all types of outpatient services. Mm-hmm. But I would be quick to add they share one common characteristic. They're all profitable. And in any given hospital, there are a lot of services that are profitable and a lot that are not. And the mental health inpatient services that were referenced earlier are a known money-losing area of any hospital's delivery system. So a hospital has to balance money-making services with money-losing services in order to be able to maintain a margin that allows them to stay and serve the community. And if through these investor-owned facility construction, you're able to pull the profitable services and margins out of the hospital, which is a not-for-profit organization, and put them in an investor-owned setting, you're jeopardizing what goes on for the future of the hospital and the future of the community and its ability to deliver these money-losing services as part of its mix.
Would you be in favor of having all medical facilities be nonprofit?
It's, Madam Chair, it's not something I've ever considered. I think that
most of our hospitals are.
I mean,
55 are nonprofits and 2 of them are for profit.
That's correct. 55 and 2, that's correct. I think that the motivation of a not-for-profit organization is that it keeps any retained earnings in the community to help serve the community that it's located within. That may involve building, as was described in Providence's case, a new patient tower, because that's what the community needs. The conflict that exists here is that you now have one regulated entity, not-for-profit hospitals and for-profit hospitals, vying in a marketplace with investor-owned facilities that have no regulatory oversight and that are pulling out margin from the hospital. And so if you want to have a comprehensive health planning mm-hmm. and health resource allocation process, we say great. But you have to look at all the inputs into the healthcare equation, because I guarantee you that Senator Westland's testimony about 7 MRIs in Bend, we were trying to call to get this information when we heard it. I would guarantee you that probably not more than 1 or 2 of those 7 are owned by the hospital. They're owned by, my guess is, by investors who are seeking to pull that revenue away from the hospital, because physicians who order MRIs can direct that service to be performed at a facility they may have a financial interest in.
Sure, may I ask one
question? I'm sorry. We have 5 minutes, and I want, before you go any further, Grant and and Mary Gear, yeah. Why don't you, I'm sorry to cut you off.
I'll step back.
Okay, have them give their testimony, because I am in 4 minutes going to start the next bill, because we have a number of people to testify.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Well,
they're coming. Yeah. We need to hear this part again, because I guarantee you that if investor-owned centers are opening up and we have no direction over those, you can't expect hospitals to try to balance with the high end as well as the low end at the same time. And some kind of way, this bill has to reflect that, or we're going to be in infrastructural problems again with hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make sense to me, and especially when you look at how the reimbursement rates are done in this state. There has to be a holistic approach in how we deal with this. And somewhere along the line, we can't say it's okay for investors to open up surgery centers while we at the same time monitor what hospitals are doing, and 55 of the 57 are nonprofits. Something is wrong with that picture.
Go ahead.
Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Mary Geer, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Licensing and Quality of Care in Seniors and People with Disabilities in DHS. We're the organization that licenses and regulates nursing facilities in Oregon. And I came today prepared to talk about this bill as it relates specifically to nursing facilities. In hearing the testimony this morning, I would simply say that SPD shares concern about rising health care costs. We're the organization that manages the Medicaid funds for the long-term care system. And we also share the support for the use of certificate of need for regulating those health care costs. We were primarily concerned with the bill as drafted, leaving out some sections that are in the current statute related to the C of N regulation of nursing facilities, and would like to see those reinstated. From previous testimony, it sounds like the drafters are supportive of that, and so I would simply offer that we would be happy to work with them to either reinsert some of the language that was left out or craft new language for this bill so that we don't lose any of the current regulation through the C of N process for nursing facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I am the administrator for the Office of Community Health and Health Planning, State Public Health Division, Department of Human Services, and the Certificate of Need program is one of the four major programs within my office. And as you've heard today, you have a major policy decision to make on do you let the marketplace determine how things play out in the way of delivering services and the creation of a new facilities, or do you have a process, one piece of which would be certificate of need, that is much more regulatory oversight and planning in its aspects. And the department is remaining neutral on that policy decision, and I wish you the best of luck in making those decisions. However, as the bill is written, we do have a few concerns, administrative concerns, that I wanted to raise with you today. One, as you've already heard from the sponsors of the bill, that there would be required a mandatory health planning process in all communities across the state, regardless of whether or not certificate of need was being considered. And our concern with this is that this would require additional staff time and resources, which we don't think we'd be able to recoup in fees, and this is not anticipated in the governor's recommended budget. I would, however, say that having been through the two certificate of need processes in Eugene, I am very supportive of active community participation and planning prior to getting into the actual certificate of need process. I think that would have made the whole thing much more smoothly run in the Eugene area last year. And I was very happy to hear the sponsor say that changing this to a voluntary system that incents community participation is a very good thing. Another concern that we have with the bill is that it requires us to make a decision within 90 days. And what we have found in the past is that the applications that we get in are usually quite incomplete, and there oftentimes takes a couple of months, up to actually 4 or 5 months, going back and forth with the hospitals and getting and nursing facilities and getting input from a variety of sources prior to making a decision. And we're just concerned that the 90-day time period would limit us so much that we would be making bad decisions on inadequate information. And there are a number of other minor issues that are in the testimony that I will not address today in respect of time.
I plan to bring this bill back. What I would like to do is set a work group up, Lynn Marie, DHS, I'm not sure who would be the contact. Would it be Mary, Grant, and then Mary from the, okay. OMA, I don't know if they're here. ONA, of course, Lynn Marie, and then the Hospital Association, Jane Ellen, Kevin. Okay? So within 2 weeks, we have until the end of April. This is April 2nd to get this bill out of this chamber. And so within 2 weeks, so hopefully you'll make a very conservative effort. We do want to pass legislation that will have the votes on the floor, and I want the concerns taken in here. Okay?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a couple things that if Kevin could provide to us. Basically, Eugene's thrown up on a continual basis, and there were some land use issues that drove that process, and I think it would be helpful if we had that for the record. And additionally, Kevin, if you could provide for us the federal hoops that you have to go through for a new hospital expansion, those sorts of issues, I think it would be helpful for us to be informed on those issues as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz will be glad to provide that information as a follow-up.
Okay.
And Chair Anderson, I just wanted to ask a clarifying question as to our work group. Will there be legislative involvement in that work group?
I would like to be a part of that if that's possible, and I would like, and I also said I wanted Westland and Bates' office. I'm not sure who the designee will be from that.
Very good, thank you.
Because it needs to be a comprehensive view of that. Thank you. All right, with that, I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 948, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 4. And I'm not sure who should come first. Chris Campbell, there are 10 here. That's really 2 minutes apiece and a minute for discussion questions. So you please have to be succinct. So Chris Campbell, Sue Davidson, and Nancy Connell. Let's start with you three. And some of you can give up some of your time to others.
Okay, good morning, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. They'll be back. I am Chris Campbell, Executive Director of the Oregon Center for Nursing, and I'm here to support Senate Bill 4. The Oregon Center for Nursing is a nursing workforce center created to deal with the nursing shortage in Oregon, and actually, Senator Monis Anderson, you know a lot about this.
Sure.
So rather than talking about who all the membership is and how we came to be, the history of the Center for Nursing is that we have worked collaboratively with all of the voices of nursing involved. That's the strength of it. It's also the challenge of it. But we've always come together with a united voice for what is the best thing for the health care of Oregonians and the best thing to build nurses in this state and to retain nurses in this state. And this bill is addressing recruitment, retention, the whole lifespan of a nurse's career. We've done a lot of work since we started our strategic plan. We set a very ambitious goal to double enrollments in schools of nursing. We're at 76%, but that isn't going to get us where we need to get. It was an ambitious goal, but it's not enough. And the expansion that we've already done is not sustainable without additional funding. It's vulnerable. They're partnerships, and we're continuing to maintain them. We have tremendous results from the collaborative work of public, private, community college, baccalaureate programs, and all of the healthcare systems that have supported our ability to expand our programs. We know we have enough students to get into the pipeline. The faculty shortage is huge. The latest State Board of Nursing numbers are that we have 6 applicants for every position in our program, so we can build that pipeline if we have the resources to do it. We're all going to retire, so we know from the projections for the state that we're going to need 17,000 plus additional nurses by 2025. And over half of the nurses in Oregon are over 50, so we're doing a huge replacement when you think we have 33,000 nurses. A huge, huge replacement effort as well as expanding capacity. We need a coordinated statewide collaborative effort like we have been working on. The nursing faculty piece of this bill will help us get faculty through. In 2005, when we collected data about the number of faculty we would need for replacement by 2010, we've discovered there were 65 full-time faculty. OSBN numbers now, in the next 5 years, they're projecting 92 faculty needs. We have to be on this right now, so supporting faculty development is big. Things that we're doing to retain nurses. The other piece about the pipeline expansion is that in order to handle all those extra students that the schools have stepped up to the plate to produce, in order to place them in clinical settings, because that's one of the bottlenecks, we've created a process and a software program that centralizes clinical placements in the Portland Metro Southwest Washington region. We have all of the education partners and all of the hospital partners, and we're expanding that to public health, long-term care for clinical placements of students. It's more efficient use of faculty. We have everyone coordinating through one coordinator now since we hired her in September. And we believe we've increased the use of the clinical sites by 25%. So we are placing more students in clinical education opportunities. We've also sold the license rights to use that program to 10 other states. That money has been the money we've used to be able to hire our master's prepared coordinator, program director to run that program. So the work we've done, we've tried to make sustainable. We're not completely there yet, but that is what we look at when we start programs that we're doing. To retain nurses, there are a couple portions in the bill to retain nurses, and you'll hear more about that later. We also have a retention leadership initiative. We're in the second phase of that. The first one was a leadership summit for nurses at the point of care. Now we are moving. The nurses told us they wanted more on professional role development and more on communication skills. So we have our first three interactive workshops for nurses scheduled for June 21st, 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and then we'll be taking it throughout the state in the fall. This is all focused on building leadership competencies because nurses are responsible for not only leading their practice, but the care of the patient, and we know as this nursing shortage work increases, there will be more teams of nurses working, and nurses need to be able to lead that. We also know who you work for makes a huge difference for whether or not you stay where you are, so building those leadership capacities to retain nurses is very important to us. We've also got a diversity initiative, and you'll hear about that from Dr. Peggy Ross. We have a targeted recruitment initiative for men and minority candidates in nursing. In Oregon, we're a little ahead of the head of the curve nationally. We have gone from 10 to 12% men in nursing up to 14% in 2006. The national average is 6, so we're a success story on that. And our minority recruitment is a much tougher sell, much tougher coordinated work, actually, because so many people are involved in that. But we have increased our number of minority nurses from 7% in 2001 to 11% now in 2006.
And it's been almost 6 minutes, so.
So, thank you very much. I will turn it over to others and Dr. Davidson.
Good morning, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. I'm from Oregon Nurses Association. My area of work is in nursing practice and education and research at ONA. And my written comments are in the folder that you have received, so I will not read them. ONA is a full partner in the Oregon nursing leadership work, and you need to know that we fully support Senate Bill 4, especially the components which ensure the longevity of the Center for Nursing. And the reason is that within ONA we have special initiatives that have to do specifically with retention of nurses through working on nurse staffing and safe patient handling. Both of these two issues are so important to keep nurses in nursing. One of them deals with having adequate numbers and sort of tangentially deals with the issue of what is the work of the nurse, an issue we're trying to clarify so that it's clearer and a better job can be made to match the nurse with the work to be done with patients and families. The second is trying to reorganize, to refashion the environment of the nurse so that he or she is not lifting very large patients, thus producing muscular changes that in the end result in the end of their career far earlier than it should. So the links in the bill that have a great deal of meaning for us are those that have to do with enhancement of the workplace through some of the projects that Chris has mentioned, through the work of the partner organizations. And then finally, I want you to look at my face. I've been in nursing for 45 years. I've been so fortunate that I could do what we hope other nurses will do, and that is when they reach the end of the time they can work in one part of nursing, they can either return to or go to another part of nursing, thus keeping the nursing workforce viable and fully staffed. So the elements of the bill sustain the center, which has been such a birthplace for many projects which deal with the issue of retention. And lastly, they have enabled me as a nurse to continue my career probably far longer than I ever imagined, but that's been a benefit for me. Thank you for listening to my
comments. And the benefit to the state too.
Yes,
definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to be here. My name is Nancy Connell, and I am speaking to you today as president of the Oregon Center for Nursing Board of Directors. Mm-hmm. I'm also representing the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives, and we are administrative nurses in both Oregon and Washington. I've been a nurse for over...
With the university... All universities?
No, excuse me, the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives.
Okay. And that include what organizations?
That is us. We've got about 356 members in two states. We represent chief nursing officers and other nurses in leadership positions in both states.
In hospitals?
Hospitals, nursing home, public health.
That's what we
needed.
Okay.
Thank you. I also have been a nurse for over 40 years, and I most recently retired from being vice president for patient care services at Bay Area Hospital in Coos Bay. In fact, this is my first day of retirement, and I want you to know. I want you to know two things. I feel so strongly about this bill that I'm willing to give up sleeping in on my first day of retirement to come down. Come over here and testify to you. And the other thing is, like Sue, I am not going to be retiring from nursing. I will continue to work in my profession that I love so deeply. But I do want to talk to you a little bit about what we have done as a collaborative effort in Oregon. I'm very, very proud of the work that we have done in the last 7 years. We've done an enormous amount of stuff, and we've done it through our ability to collaborate with people who in organizations in the past that we haven't necessarily agreed with. Although our work continues to produce very, very... Oh, thank you. Excuse me. I'm also getting a cold, so... we produce some very, very excellent results, but it's not enough. And let me tell you a little story about our hospital in Coos Bay, Bay Area Hospital. The average age of our nurses is 47 in the hospital. The average age of our home health nurses is 57. Now, you don't just wake up tomorrow and become a home health nurse. This is something that you have to be actually brought up and brought along. We do have a grow your own program down in Coos Bay that I'm very, very proud of. Nursing care at the bedside is very demanding. Sue referred to that in a little bit. In a very short period of time, we're going to have more and more nurses retiring. At the same time, there are very reputable studies out there that are saying that we need more nurses than we're even projecting, not just because of the baby boom, baby boomers getting older like me and retiring, but because studies are showing that the more care a registered nurse can provide at the bedside, the more chance the patient has to lessen the number of complications that they have from being in the hospital, and the shorter their length of stay is. So where we have been projecting X number of nurses heretofore, we may be projecting long-term that we need even more than that. So I'm really suggesting that Senate Bill 4 is going to enable us to continue the preparation, continue the pipeline that we have created thus far. And I really hope that you will support our bill going forward. And thank you for allowing me to talk to you today.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your commitment. I know a lot of us are retired, but we are the ones that need to make sure that we provide environments to bring new ones on, but to keep us
here,
active.
Here. Madam Chair?
You're here. Thank you. Just a couple of comments. The subject matter is kind of an emotional one for me. When I was in high school, I wanted to be a nurse. I grew up in Oregon, but was counseled away from the opportunity because of discrimination. And because Emmanuel Hospital, which had a nursing program, was not open to taking folks who look like me. And if you talk to Senator Winters, she has a similar story to tell about her efforts to get into a program at, well, it's now OHSU. With that said, I'm looking at Goal 5 and this document. And I see that there is a goal to continue initiatives to promote culturally competent care, but there's no target date. Whereas there are target dates for the other goals. So I'm going to assume that there are some activities underway that set a path toward achieving the goal. But why is there no target date?
Senator Gorley, that I'm not quite sure why there was no target date when that strategic plan was redone. I think at that time we were so focused on program expansion that that was a little bit clearer to get our hands around. We do have a nursing workforce diversity initiative that Dr. Peggy Ross is going to explain a little bit more clearly. And we do have three committees working. One of them is on culturally competent education and staff development. And we do have some targets for the work of that initiative. So my thought, because I was in part of the redevelopment of that, was that we just didn't know how to do that yet. We were so focused on expanding program capacity at that time.
I'm going to accept that for now, but mm-hmm. I'm also going to say, and I leave these words with you as a charge, that because this target is focused on, and I'm going to read this to you, ensuring that nursing education programs in Oregon include content in culturally competent care in the curricula, that this is one that can't wait. It's very much tied to eliminating disparities in healthcare, and we're not going to get there unless we're dealing with the quality of our educational programs. So that needs to be moved up higher on the list. It needs to be matched with an aggressive effort. And I know that our state is rich with people and organizations that represent racial and ethnic populations that would love to be associated with the work of moving this goal forward. But it's got to be seen as central and critical and crucial to everything else that we're talking about, along with the nursing shortage. And I hope you hear me on this.
Yes, ma'am, I do. And okay. I agree with you.
Thank you. We need to, we have seven more people. And
Madam Chair, could I just very briefly, in relation to Bay Area, and your shortage, how many nurses do you get from the program at SWOC, and how short, and how much under what you need are they able to do with their current?
Right now, every year they enroll 27 students. Bay Area Hospital contributes to one of the nursing instructors. We pay about $120,000 on a biennium for an instructor. Bay Area Hospital hires about 13 of those every year. And we train them
13 out of how many?
13 out of 27. And Southwestern Oregon Community College provides it for all of the Southern Coast, so it's not just Bay Area Hospital.
I guess I was the point I was trying to get to was because I just want to make sure as we're looking at this that for nurse training, community colleges are vitally important.
Oh, absolutely.
And how... I want to make sure that we know that enhancing those programs is going to help fill the gaps. So.
Southwestern Oregon Community College is part of the Oregon Consortium of Nursing Education.
Okay, Darlene Young, Barb Fritz, and Ann McCarthy. And if you could maybe just one of you speak out of the three to consolidate, and then we have three others. You can all come up unless you... But we really only have time for one more. We have to be out of here at 10. We have another meeting at 10 and then floor session at 10:15.
Chairman Senator Mons Anderson and committee. My name is Darlene Young. I'm a registered nurse. I had retired 12 years ago. Sort of. I retired from paid work. I'm talking to you today about what we call triage for the healthcare system in the United States. There are many, many different parts to address, and I will just go briefly over a general, hope not too dramatically, but we have the patient is the nation's health care system. Our assessment is severe injury due to prolonged denial and band-aiding, not yet terminal, but in grave danger if aggressive treatment is not initiated very soon. The intervention would be to encourage renewed participation of retired volunteer RNs whose education and years of experience are invaluable in care, recovery, and rehabilitation of this patient. An acknowledged severe shortage of nurses exists in all areas of health care. More are reaching retirement age. Fewer nursing faculty members are available to teach, so schools struggle and nursing school enrollments are limited and lower. This means that the problem is getting worse, not better. Some studies suggest shortages nearing 500,000 in the next 15 years. I have read statistics from nearly 400,000 to over 800,000. These are constantly being revised. A treasure chest of experienced retired nurses could help to relieve this shortage quickly by volunteering to actively mentor new nurses just beginning their practice, recruit more people into the field through community outreach programs, publicizing the satisfactions and benefits of a nursing career, assist the needs of returning service people as patient advocates. We know that's very necessary right now when we've heard about the situation in the hospitals in Washington, D.C. and across the country. Assist public health and Medicare recipients as care advocates and educators, thereby providing relief to overwhelmed systems. Use their experience in programs to educate the public about health, wellness, and self-care. Be available as additional hands-on nurses in event of natural disaster, pandemic, or other public health crisis. A nursing education with years of experience to enhance knowledge and bring maturity to decision-making processes is something this country cannot afford to waste. Nurses, when they retire from paid employment, do not retire their compassion, concern, principles, ethics, and need to serve humanity. They may, however, discover that their now fixed, read, broken income is difficult to spread over the expense of volunteer nurse activity. There are options to help solve this problem. For example, hours of volunteer time could be used at a stated per hour salary as either a tax credit or deduction. Continuing education units could be offered gratis. Liability insurance could be offered gratis. Health insurance benefits could be offered without or at reduced cost. Utilizing such a valuable resource could save many dollars in health care for the nation, as well as enhancing lives of many in desperate need of care. Think of the positive possibilities.
Thank you. And this leads to the point that we made, or led to the point that we made earlier regarding the need to use the pool that we already have. Just a comment briefly from either of you two.
One of the points that I was
just introduce yourself.
I'm Barb Fritz. I'm a nurse of 50 years. One of the points that I wanted to make in enticing retired nurses or volunteers to come forward is that we might need to come up with some incentives. We've had a hard time retaining volunteers. The public health department did a big push in January to serve 800 homeless people, and they only got 8 of the people that they were looking for to come out of the woodwork to help. When we, a Red Cross group of us nurses, had 150 people come in when Katrina looked like we were going to have the survivors come to Washington High School. And after that effort ended, a few of us, and I'm just speaking for myself, not on the Red Cross, but we tried calling all those folks back, and they vanished back into the woodwork. So we were that's why we're suggesting some incentives to keep volunteers able to do this. I was doing my income tax, and it cost me $435 last year just to be an RN. And that's not even to go out the door and buy gas to go anyplace to volunteer. So that's why we would appreciate your consideration for incentives to help us do this.
My name is Alice McCarthy, and I, too, next year will have 50 years of nursing involved. And I have been retired since 97 officially, but continued to work for 7 more years on an on-call basis in at PSU and their school health services. I also wanted to tell Senator Gordley that I worked with Bea Gilmore at the Visiting Nurse Association, and I believe she was one of the first to graduate from OHSU, an African American, very dedicated, very wonderful person.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. And we are working on this concept, and so we will be in touch with you. Okay. All right. And all right. Great. Kristen Leonard, Peggy Ross, and Judith Woodruff. And unfortunately, we will have to leave at 10, and so who wants to speak? And Lori and Kay from the community colleges, we're just going to have to postpone you, okay?
Okay, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Peggy Ross. I'm the Associate Dean and Professor of Nursing at Linfield Good Samaritan College of Nursing, and I'm here to testify in support of the Senate bill. I'm going to focus my comments on the regional collaboration that we have in progress within the nursing community to increase the nursing workforce diversity in Oregon. We know that all ethnic minority groups in Oregon are underrepresented in nursing. So that's a starting point, a given. Linfield, we've been working really hard based on funding from a federal grant to increase the diversity of our student body, and we feel like it's a lot of work. We've been successful at it, and we're continuing our efforts. Our focus is primarily on Hispanic students because that's where the biggest disparity is, and in 2 years we've been able to increase our numbers from 9 to 28, so we feel like we've made pretty good progress, and we have an excellent applicant pool with much bigger numbers from all ethnic minority groups than we've ever seen before. So it's very positive. But I want to really focus and let everybody know that we have a regional nursing workforce diversity initiative ongoing. It began in fall 05 with a summit Well, we invited representatives from nursing schools, health care organizations, and community organizations who were interested in diversifying the nursing workforce to meet at a summit. As a result of that day, we now have a steering committee and three work groups that are working on, first of all, developing an admission database so that we know demographically who is applying to nursing schools, whether or not they're getting in, so that we can begin to understand what the where we need to work in terms of developing a pipeline into the nursing programs and support systems. Our second group is on working on recruitment and retention, primarily focusing right now on mentoring students in the pipeline from middle school all the way through doctoral programs. And the third work group that we have is a work group on curriculum and staff development, which is focused on an initiative to increase cultural competence. All these work groups have been meeting. We have proposals that are being vetted by the steering committee, and actually I'm on sabbatical, half sabbatical this year, and I'm working with the Oregon Center for Nursing and with the steering committee to find funding for all these projects that are coming out of these work groups. So we're feeling really good about progress that's being made. There's still a lot to be done, but we're working hard on it.
Thank you, and I applaud your nursing program. I've been invited several times to speak to the Linfield nurses. It's part of their leadership program, and I always enjoy that, and they have some great questions for me. So
thank you.
Okay.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, I'm Kristen Leonard for the record, and working with the Oregon Center for Nursing on Senate Bill 4. I think what I'll do right now is I was going to go through the various elements of Senate Bill 4 and talk about the elements plus those amendments or some of the language that we've been working on with different interested parties. I'll pass on that right now due to time, and we'll just continue to work with all of you as members of the committee.
And I'd rather have that when we have, evidently there are some amendments that aren't back yet.
Right.
Yes, and so when we have those amendments back, then we'll address that issue. Yeah.
I'm Judith Woodruff from the Northwest Health Foundation, the Director of Nursing, and also the Director of the Partners Investing in Nursing's Future, which is a nationwide collaborative of foundations and nursing programs addressing the nursing shortage in different states. I just want to leave you with a couple of thoughts, since I know time is short. Oregon nursing leadership is ahead of the curve. Nationwide, this is being seen as a model of states with regards to nursing collaboration, and something we can all be proud of. It's something that has happened, and they've overcome a lot of turf battles, and a lot of previous hurts and arguments about nursing have come together to look at the future and to develop the nurses that we need for the 21st century. This is a phenomenal task, and they are committed to doing that. The nationwide, they're being watched. We're all being watched as the model that other states want to emulate. Several states are currently modeling the consortium education program. As Chris mentioned, several of them have bought the clinical nurse placement license software program. Oregon just really is a leader, but they're only about halfway there yet, and they're going to need the long-term support of both private funders like ourselves, but also of the public funding system. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have all these nurses here. I just feel so at home with all of you here. Anyway, thank you very much. As soon as the amendments are ready, remember that the end of April is the last day to get Senate bill passed out, so work quickly on those amendments, and then we will be maybe having some evening sessions too, but starting Wednesday, we will be meeting at 8 a.m., so this Wednesday we'll be starting at
This Wednesday.
Just on Wednesdays at this point in time, starting at 8 a.m. With that, thank you, everyone. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4, and we are adjourned.